This is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. At the beginning of June, as demonstrators across the United States took to the streets in support of the Black Lives Matter movement and in opposition to police violence, Mexico was witnessing protests of its own. Giovanni Lopez, a construction worker detained by police near Guadalajara for not wearing a face mask amid the coronavirus pandemic, turned up dead, his body showing signs of torture. Now, the kind of body cams that have frequently exposed police violence in the United States are not widely used in Mexico. But in this case, Giovanni's family recorded a video of the 30-year-old being taken away, and they released it to the public in hopes of getting justice. Protests followed. Three police officers were arrested. But only about 10% of cases of police torture get reported in Mexico. And as a World Justice Project report from late last year found, nearly 8 in 10 inmates experience some form of violence or ill-treatment at the hands of police, with torture often used as an investigative tool or to extract confessions. I spoke with one of the report's co-authors, Roberto Hernandez, a senior researcher at the World Justice Project. Hernandez also co-directed the Emmy Award-winning documentary, Presunto Culpable, or Presumed Guilty, a film that exposed weaknesses in Mexico's criminal justice system and helped usher in a major justice reform. As you'll hear in this episode, there has been some progress in recent years, but Mexico has a long way to go when it comes to improving policing.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Thank you very much for being with me today, Roberto.
Thank you for having me.
Recent protests against police violence here in Mexico have shed a light on the country's issues with police abuse. And this has happened even as there have been large-scale protests across cities in the United States about police abuse there. Which brings me to your research. Late last year, you co-authored and published a report for the World Justice Project that explores 10 years of surveys conducted by Mexico's National Statistics Agency, and it found that 78% of the prison population had suffered some kind of torture or mistreatment. But one thing that stands out reading it is how frequently this violence occurs at the point that someone is detained, so before they even arrive at a conviction. Can you tell us about your findings and why torture occurs at that point?
What Mexico Statistics Agency did was deploy a national survey to inmates. So it isn't the case that they went in 2010, for example, and then back in 2011, and then back in 2012, and so on and so forth, in order to ask these questions to inmates. What they did is they simply went into the prisons at the end of 2016, and they drew a random sample of, if I recall well, it was 62,000 inmates, which is enough to represent Mexico nationally and to represent each state. And so then they asked questions to these inmates about how they were treated by the police during arrest procedures, or what were their experiences at the prosecution service. And among these questions, they asked about torture or mistreatment. And what was found is that 79% of the inmates suffered some form of ill treatment or torture. And this number, if you look at what this sample size represents, it turns out that it's 148,000 persons that reported some some sort of abuse when you apply the expansion factors to the survey. And these numbers surpasses, for example, the total number of torture reports to Mexico's prosecution service at the federal level. The prosecution service had, when we wrote this report, a total of 13,800 cases. And this number, when what we estimate with the survey, is 148,000. So what the survey is helping us do is to detect torture and mistreatment cases that are not reported formally to authorities. And I think that's one of the main advantages of the survey instrument. So that's part of what I'd like to share.
So can I just to clarify, so that means, if I have this right, about 10% of those cases of torture end up getting investigated in some way?
That's about right. Yeah, it's about a proportion. Only 10% of actual torture cases end up being reported to the prosecution service. I wouldn't say that they are actually investigated. So what the survey instrument helps us do is to find the size of the sub-reporting of torture, or the lack of actual formal reporting to authorities. And it means that these crimes are not going to be investigated at all.
But one thing that, reading through your report, that it seemed to occur is that a large portion of the tortures and the incidents are happening at the point when someone is detained. Is there a reason for that?
So we think that the torture, the mistreatment, plays a role in controlling a suspect, in subjecting a person and making an arrest in many of these cases. But there are things that just simply are not legitimate police procedures. So the inmates were asked, for example, whether they received electroshocks. They were asked whether there was a rape, for example. They were asked whether they suffered lesions with knives, or whether they were burned, whether their family was threatened. And crucially, for example, they were asked if there was a bag placed over their heads. And so these are things that unambiguously represent torture or ill treatment. And also they were asked whether they resisted arrest. And most of them replied that they hadn't resisted arrest. So there was no legitimate explanation of use of force to justify what happened or what was done to these persons. A forced undressing, for example, is also something that we saw. And one thing we did is we compared the experiences of torture and ill treatment at the prison level, once persons already are in custody in the prison, with torture levels during arrest procedures. And of course, we found that it's much higher. The frequency of mistreatment and torture is much higher during arrest procedures. So we believe that that's an indication that torture plays a role in generating evidence or in applying pressure to suspects to make a confession, for example.
They're getting coerced, essentially.
Yes, we believe so. It's certainly one of the roles that torture is playing, to get people to make a confession or to get people to make a statement of some sort where they implicate some other person in the crime. So Mexico is using torture and ill treatment as investigative tools.
If we look at what happened recently in Jalisco, it involved state police. But your research found that there is even a higher rate of torture when people are detained or arrested by federal authorities, such as military forces. Can you talk about that? Why is that?
So, yes, what we found is that the Navy, the Army will apply much more force and will apply many more methods of mistreatment and torture than, for example, the municipal police. And I'm not in a position to say why this happens, but I would suggest that what's going on is that there is less judicial supervision of the arrests made by the Navy and the arrests made by the Army. And not only is there less judicial supervision, but there also are less legislated tools to create an environment where Navy officers or the military are held accountable for the arrests that they make. There are some incipient efforts to regulate. For example, Mexico's Human Rights Commission has recommended that body-worn cameras should be used, but there is very little effort to oversee the implementation of this requirement from the Human Rights Commission. And even the survey instrument that we're discussing, it did not ask whether arrest procedures were videotaped, for example. So I cannot compare the experiences of the inmates who had a videotaped arrest to those that did not have a videotaped arrest. But what we do see is that the Navy and the Army consistently have the highest numbers of complaints.
One thing that's interesting, just to let listeners know, is that since 2006, the military has played an increased role in policing in Mexico as a result of the fight against organized crime. So I want to give people that context.
You're right to point out that there's an increased role of the Army and the Navy in the criminal justice system. So with together, the Army and the Navy make up 9% of the arrests of the whole prison population. But the main finding is everybody is torturing or mistreating detainees. That's what the report finds. It's 78%, 79%.
You know, since the data was collected or this data was put together, we've seen a major political change in Mexico, not only at a federal level with Andrés Manuel López Obrador as president in 2018, but also with his party gaining control at the local level across much of the country in that year. What I'm wondering is, has this big shift in terms of the political party in control meant any sort of change in policy around policing and stemming this type of police violence? In other words, are there things that we can be looking for, maybe at the gubernatorial level or at the mayoral level, that are working better or worse? But basically, are there reasons for hope with change in political power?
I think that this survey itself is a reason for hope. And I haven't explained enough about the history of this survey, but, and I would like to. I think ordinarily it has been assumed that torture and ill treatment, because they are illegal, they cannot be measured accurately. And when Peña Nieto was president, I recall a time when the United Nations torture rapporteur came to Mexico, Juan Mendez, and there was a diplomatic dispute between José Antonio Meade, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and the UN torture rapporteur. And Mexico's government ended up shutting out the UN anti-torture rapporteur over a dispute on the amount of torture cases. And José Antonio Meade said that he had only shown 14 cases of torture in Mexico, and that the data was insufficient to say that there was a systemic and generalized use of illegality and torture and mistreatment in the criminal justice system. And what this report shows is that, in fact, we have a widespread use of torture and mistreatment in Mexico. We have a widespread use of, sleep deprivation, water deprivation, asphyxiation, sexual torture against women in particular. For example, 15% of the sample responded, of the female sample in this survey responded that they were raped by arresting authorities. So there's an immense amount of illegal violence going on. And to the extent that the data renders these problems visible, I think that is good news. Unfortunately, I haven't seen any significant policy change to address these problems. I haven't seen a national law, for example, that would make it mandatory to videotape arrest procedures in Mexico. And Mexico is a federal state, like the United States, for example. So it is It would seem that this is a matter for state procedures or state legislatures, but in Mexico, we have a peculiarity, which is that as of 2014, there was a constitutional reform approved, and Mexico now has a nationwide legislation for criminal procedures. So, for example, in the United States, if it was desired to have a nationwide policy on body-worn cameras, it would be difficult to implement because these matters are often left up to the police department level. So it is difficult to standardize the procedures. But in Mexico, we now have a national legislation. So it would only take an amendment to this national legislation in order to make it mandatory nationwide that there should be a use of body-worn cameras. But unfortunately, it hasn't happened. And I haven't seen the administration of López Obrador change policy and propose reforms to the National Code of Criminal Procedure and in order to make it mandatory to videotape arrests or to videotape interrogations of suspects or to videotape, for example, police lineups or identification parades or to videotape, for example, stops and searches. So I haven't seen major examples of policy change. The most hopeful thing that I have seen is that there was this effort to create a code of practice, if you will, called the Modelo Nacional de Policía, which is designed to improve the quality of the municipal police, which is the one that makes 32% of the arrests in Mexico. But I haven't seen any serious money behind the efforts to create this model or this code of practice. So unfortunately, I cannot point to any major police overhaul in Mexico. What I can point out to is to very specific examples of positive change. So in Escobedo, in Nuevo León, it's a small municipality in the north of Mexico. We see all these positive changes where the police wear cameras to make arrests. They have the obligation to use body-worn cameras to make even traffic stops. They also, when they interview suspects or witnesses, they record these events with cameras. And there has been a decline in the use of force that is illegitimate, and a decline also in complaints of torture and ill treatment. And so we've been there and we've documented all these positive practices. We're yet to publish our findings on what we saw in Escobedo, but I think it's going to be these small examples of, if you will, islands of integrity that could set forth positive change and prove that it is possible to make these things happen in Mexico. But it hasn't been the López Obrador administration, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting what you're saying, because what we've seen in the United States is that body cams have been able to shine a light on abuses, particularly against Black Americans. And it has led to some of the protests and outrage. And it raises the question of what are all the things that we missed before that, before the body cams were used. I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that you co-directed a film that was the most watched documentary in Mexico called Presunto Culpable. It focused on the case of Toño Zúñiga, who was falsely convicted of murder and later exonerated, and you were his lawyer. It also exposed major weaknesses in Mexico's judicial system. So we're talking now about some of these recent small changes. What did you call them? You called them points of integrity, or what did you?
Islands of integrity. Yes.
Islands of integrity.
Yes.
And so we've got these small cases that you're pointing to, but obviously a lot has changed since the release of the film more than a decade ago, including, as you referenced, some pretty significant reforms. Are there parts of those reforms that have helped in terms of police violence and to diminish police torture?
I think that's a very good question. And so one of the things that this survey report enables us to do, and one of its objectives, was precisely to find out the extent to which we could detect positive change as a result of these reforms that were partly propelled by the film. And so some of the things that the film showed were, for example, that judges relied on written testimony to make decisions about culpability, for example. So inmates would also report in, you know, 10 years ago, they would report that judges typically were not present during the trial hearings. They would say that they were mostly in a system that presumed guilt and that they were not given a chance really to demonstrate that they were innocent. The survey showed that there was an over-reliance on eyewitness testimony to get to convictions, for example. It showed that there was an over-reliance on confessions and almost a total lack of use of physical evidence to demonstrate culpability. And so we wanted to know what changed. And I can say that the most obvious changes did took place. So, for example, we went from a system where only 7% of inmates said there was a judge present in the courtroom and he was listening to me, to a system where basically now all of the inmates or most of the inmates are saying that there is a judge present in the courtroom. There is a decrease in the use of torture, but it's only a marginal decrease in the use of torture. There's an increase, for example, in the legibility of verdicts. So most inmates now say that they have more legible, more understandable judicial decisions, that they understood what was going on in the courtroom. They feel that the attorneys were actually defending them better when we compare their experiences to those who were tried under the old justice system. And perhaps I should take a step back and explain why we know this. When we had a sample of 62,000 inmates, it's an enormous sample, and it enables us to compare the experiences of those who were tried under the old justice system with those who were tried under the new justice system. And so we can't see actually these differences between the two groups. So there is positive change, but it is simply not enough change. The main problems, the persistent problems of Mexico's criminal justice system are still there. The use of torture and ill treatment, the overuse of eyewitness testimony, which is not properly and reliably obtained, the overuse of confessions as part of the tools used to obtain incriminating evidence. So Mexico has still a long way to go. And I believe that efforts should be made to have a serious police reform in Mexico in order to eradicate this violence, the illegal violence in the arrest procedures, the illegal violence in the questioning of suspects. But we also need to make these efforts in order to increase police efficiency, because something we haven't mentioned is that the rate of the clearance rate or the crime clearance rate is very, very low. It's extremely low in Mexico. It is estimated that only 0.1% of the crimes end up with a conviction. So very few crimes are reported to authorities. It is salient that in Mexico, for example, you cannot report crime to the police directly. You have to go to the prosecution service. And we have obviously less prosecutors than police officers. So that means that a crime victim often needs to be waiting for hours in order to make a crime report. And so these things need to change. And we need to have a police that can actually receive crime reports, that can take the first steps to investigate a crime, and that can obtain evidence and collect evidence reliably.
And I just want to double check that. You said just 0.1% of crimes result, 0.1% of crimes result in convictions?
Correct. Wow. We can check the numbers. Very few crimes are reported to begin with. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's about 10% or less than 10%. Mm-hmm. The reporting rate varies per crime. So for example, people who are victims of kidnapping are far more likely to report, but still it's only, you know, about 24% of the kidnappings that are reported to the police. And so only a fraction of the reported crimes are actually investigated. And then only a fraction of the reported crimes and the investigated crimes, actually the authorities are capable of gathering enough evidence to proceed with the case, to accuse a person, to make an arrest of a suspect. And then of those, only very few cases end up with a procedure being initiated before the courts. And then once things are in the courtroom, though, the conviction rate soars. It's super high. It's basically, it's a statistical certainty that people who are accused before a courtroom are going to be convicted, in spite of the lack of evidence, in spite of the torture, in spite of the ill treatment, in spite of the weaknesses in the investigative procedure. Once a suspect is accused and in court, almost everybody is going to be convicted. The problem is the gap between the amount of crimes, which is estimated to be 33 million crime victims per year in Mexico, and then the very small fraction of cases that actually see that there was an investigation done to clear up the crime.
I want to ask you one more question, and that is trying to make these changes. And when we look at everything that you're telling us, it just sounds massive and complex and difficult to put in place real changes. I know this is a challenging thing because it sounds like it's almost like trying to turn an elephant around. But if there was something that you were going to recommend as a first step towards making this change, to diminish torture and improve accountability, what would a first step be that you would recommend?
I believe strengthening defense services is the first step. There is a belief that is incorrect that defenders are going to increase impunity, that defenders are going to make it difficult for police to do their jobs, that defenders in a way are a public enemy of sorts, because due to their efforts, criminals go free, for example. And this perspective, I think it's very ingrained in the belief of politicians in Mexico of all kinds. So the defense services are underfunded. And when the defense services are weak, they cannot call the police accountable. The salaries of the defense services are very low, extremely low, and they do not compare with the salaries of prosecutors. And their caseload is absurd. They have, I believe it's about an average of one case per day. So you cannot go to 365 trials in a year and do a proper job of representing a client. Again, I may have the exact statistics wrong, but this is the generally what is going on. So strengthening the defense services would really help expose the problems with the police procedures, and it would create a strong incentive for the police to do a better job. We now have an adversary trial system, which is similar to the one in the United States. There is expected to be a partisan representation of the case of the state on behalf of prosecutors and a partisan representation of the case of the suspects. And without the proper resources, without the ability to investigate independently from what the prosecution did or from what the police did, the defense is incapable of presenting an alternative explanation of the events for which a person was accused. This is very important. And in this survey that we're discussing, inmates were asked whether they actually committed the crime for which they are in prison. And only about 45% of the inmates said that they were guilty of the crime. So that means we have an enormous error rate. It's basically a toss-up of a coin would be a more fair procedure than going through the entire trial process, because a toss-up has a probability of 50%, right? So 55% of the inmates may be innocent. So the first step, I think, is to really have an adversary system and to strengthen the adversaries. And we have a prosecution service that gets away with police procedures that were obtained on, confessions that were obtained under torture, with coerced testimony from witnesses. It gets away with unreliable lineups to make identifications. And without a strong defense service, these flaws in the way crime events were investigated cannot be exposed in the courtroom, and then judges therefore make many mistakes.
Yeah, as we discussed, it, there are a lot of steps that can be taken. And I would encourage that people look at the report, which we'll make sure that there's a link in the podcast notes for anybody who wants to peruse it and read those recommendations further. I want to thank you very much, Roberto, for taking the time today to speak with me and discussing this very important topic. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good day.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis, and this episode was produced by Luisa Lemmy. Check the podcast notes for a link to the report discussed in this episode. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. Check out concerts online at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and your reviews help us spread the word. So give us 5 stars, share, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.